And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Darren McFarland, that's me down here in Rutherford County, in Smyrna to be exact. Willie Donick is hanging over in East Nashville, where he's been this whole time, and Chase McCabe will join us tomorrow on the program. He has extended his vacation. I don't exactly know what that means. It just means he's not going to be here today. Elijah Campbell holding fort at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Willie, how was your weekend?
Excellent, Darren. I was up in your former stomping grounds. I was up in the Commonwealth for a little while.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I watched a little more baseball, the final tournament play of the summer season. So, have you ever been to Shelbyville? Do they call it Shelbyville in Kentucky, or is that just Shelbyville, Tennessee? Is it more Shelbyville if you're talking Kentucky?
Since in Kentucky you say Louisville, I would say it's Shelbyville.
You're right, and Shelbyville is not far from Louisville. So,
rather than Louisville.
Yeah, it's a pretty town. It, you know, a lot of horse. There's a beautiful horse facility there. You know, real, you know, good central small town feel. So saw a bunch of baseball and then headed on back last night. It's been great to get ready for the week to come. I mean, the season's on. The Predators are in Edmonton. They're in the bubble.
Indeed,
it's time.
They are.
We've been waiting for this for so long.
Indeed, we have. We'll get into that certainly on today's show. So how did they fare? How did things work out?
Victory. They went 6-0. It was a great,
wow.
Great tournament. They beat a team from Ohio in the finals yesterday. They had to win three games yesterday. They had a game that they got behind one of the days, and so because the games were going so late, they had to move a game that was going to be played Friday night to Sunday morning. So they had to win that game and then two more, and so it was quite the day. They swept the triple header. Over the course of the day. Started at 9 a.m. and got done at about 8 p.m.
So. That's awesome. We tried to do the same thing as you guys, Mahoney's Knights, but just fell short in that third game. So, runner-up in the championship game, but still very, very proud. Back-to-back weekends with rings and trophies. And, man, it was hot. You're talking about eight-year-olds playing three games in one day after they played two the day before, five games in that heat in the middle of the day. I was really proud of them. Wanted to see. We ran into a buzzsaw team, a team that we've gone up against. They're out of Smyrna, Outcasts, that have a ton of those kids on that roster. We've been playing for years and years and years in rec ball. So it was cool to have that in the championship game. They were one of those teams that they got red hot on Sunday, and you know it's hard to stop that train, right, when you get red hot. And actually we had been playing really well too, but I could just tell their bats were alive and they were feeling it, and it was just a little too much. It was a one run game late, and then it kind of got away late, and that was it. But hey, building blocks, a higher bracket too. It was in a higher bracket this weekend, so we moved up to a higher bracket and made it all the way to the championship game in back-to-back weekend. So certainly progress with Tidal Wave Blue, but I was kind of hoping for back-to-back championships, but fell a little bit short. But all in all, it was a lot of fun, and we're going to take this weekend off, and I think it's much needed. We need a break from the sun, the heat, and it's draining, as you know. It is mentally and physically draining.
Sure.
When the weekend is over, so I think it'll be welcome this weekend to take this weekend off. So we'll be off this weekend baseball. You'll be off this weekend in baseball. And who knows if Major League Baseball will be off this weekend. I don't know where in the heck this is going, but Miami, we got a problem. The Marlins have come in with 14 positive tests. They were supposed to have their home opener tonight. That has been canceled. The New York Yankees were headed to Philadelphia to take on the Phillies, which is where Miami just came from. That has been canceled, and I don't know where in the heck this is going, but baseball just started up on Thursday, and here we are with this story on Monday morning.
I think to be fair, we all thought that there was a chance this could happen. I just was, it was just crushing to have it happen so quick. So I think, you know, the reaction has been swift and crazy with the media, as you would expect. I think it's important to, if you're in there, slow things down. You might have to take a day or two, right? And just not play any games until you can find out more answers. But there's a lot of things that you got to find out, you know, like you're seeing a lot of stuff. The major league season is in jeopardy. And that may be true, but it's like, if you didn't have a plan for this kind of thing, how could you ever start?
Right.
Right. There was a pretty good chance that something like this could happen. So you had to have a plan for this, right?
One would think.
I would think. So I want to know more about the players. When did they test? Are there any false positives in there? Is anybody actually feeling symptoms? All of these things could go into how quickly they need to stop and then how quickly they could start playing again. But I have to say that if your answer is just, well, we got to shut everything down, I know that's a knee-jerk reaction, but I would hope that they had planned for this type of thing and yet they already had some things in place that were going to go into play when this triggered. And maybe it's a good thing that it happened so early. But I think another thing that we can say is, if you've been listening to our show throughout this whole process, is these are things that we brought up into question when everything was being churned out, right? When they started with the whole idea of the bubble, we were saying that sounds a lot better. A bubble might be hard enough. But when they came out with the plan of 10 teams and 3 divisions and traveling to the parks, we all did scratch our heads and say a little bit, like, could you pull that off? They're going on planes. They're staying in hotels. They're not quarantining. And that did lower the odds that they could pull it off successfully without something like this happening. True?
I don't think there's any way around it. And I agree with everything you just said. I mean, it's what we've talked about. If they didn't think this could happen, I mean, for one, I'm not saying that they are in that mode of, gosh, holy cow, I can't believe this happened. I'm not saying that's going on behind the scenes. I'm just saying if you started up, like you said, and you weren't prepared for this, then I don't know what rock you've been living under or what cave you've been in, but I don't believe that to be the case. I guess they're just trying to figure out, okay, what now? Now that it has happened, now what? Now what do we do? And, I mean, you know, it's just alarming because it just got started. And it was a good weekend for baseball. It was nice to go in. You know, you do these baseball trips, as you know, and a lot of times after you're done with the pool play on Saturday, you know, especially depending on the time of day, did you have morning games, you go out to lunch, or if you had late afternoon games, you go out to dinner as a team. And, you know, we did that type of stuff. And you go in, it was nice to go in to a restaurant and eat, whether it was the bar area with TVs or depending on where you went, you know, the setup of them having televisions and having baseball games on them, that was cool to see. It was refreshing. It was a welcome sight to look up and see different baseball games. That's actually live action, live games going on as you sit there over a meal, you know, and talk and look up and you can watch live games and to know that, you know, now things are already being, you know, postponed. Marlins and Orioles tonight, Phillies and Yankees, and what do you do from here? I think, to me, one thing they've got to figure out, and I'm not, certainly it's way, way over my head, but I just think right now, while the testing is great, and obviously we've come a long way in the span of this whole time we've been going through this since basically everything shut down, testing is good, but whether it's the public, us, Willie, or these teams, obviously you know their process is going to be much, much faster. But with that being said, I still feel like it's too long. Like, why is the public, what are we having to wait right now for test results? Week, 10 days, 2 weeks? What is it? I mean, I guess depending on where you are, where you did it, location. But I mean,
a lot depends.
You know what good is it if you find out your results 2 weeks later? You know what I mean? It's like, well, what did you accomplish with that? If you took a test and you find out 2 weeks later, what have you really accomplished? And I think these teams are having to wait, 24, 48 hours before they find out?
Well, they get it pretty quick. They get it. They remember when they first started gathering the players. Well,
okay,
I think 24 hours.
Okay. Then can we
make it faster? Every day.
Can it be sped up? You know, I'm not in those labs. I don't know how that works. But is there a way to get it even faster, you know? I mean, is that possible? I don't know. Like I said, that stuff's
Someday it'll be possible as we continue to fight it as a whole, you know, human race. We're fighting this thing as quickly as we possibly can. When they first started gathering the players, I know like around 4th of July, there was a lot of concern that it was taking a little longer. They got a little backlog, but they have their system, this place in Utah, that turns the tests around as quickly as they can. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it's fairly – they got to where they felt like they were in a pretty good routine. From the time that they gathered in the camps and then starting playing these scrimmages, they were routinely testing the players. I think where it started to get more difficult is when you start traveling from one city to another. One team staying in a hotel. You've got the staff. You've got the flight attendants and all of the different ways. And you have the caseloads going up around them. I think it just made it more difficult to avoid. And I go back to my original thought is, are any of the players really feeling sick? Is it all an asymptomatic sort of thing? I think they were ready to take the field in a lot of cases, and then they just, you know, they tested positive, so they had to sit out, which is very reasonable. So what's the plan to deal with this? And what do they do tonight, right? There's a lot of complicated things because who were the Marlins supposed to play? The Marlins played the Phillies yesterday. The Phillies are supposed to play the Yankees tonight. You know, so that would be a huge story. The Yankees are supposed to go in there and play in the same park, stay in the same visiting clubhouse that the Marlins were playing in. So that creates all kinds of layers to this, complications. You know, Miami was playing the Braves in the preseason scrimmages, right? So are the Braves being affected by that at all? Remember, the Braves had their top two catchers that couldn't play over the weekend. They tested negative, but they were feeling like weird. They had a cold. They had symptoms, so they held those guys out. So I think it's just basically you're going to have to fight through this kind of stuff all the way through, and hopefully you can keep it somewhat under control. But, I mean, maybe it just can't be.
Yeah,
I wouldn't give up, though. I wouldn't start tweeting out and starting telling everybody, well, the season's over today, which a lot of people are on Twitter, like the season's over. I don't think so. I think hopefully you plan for this.
Hopefully. And I certainly wasn't suggesting that they're dragging their feet on getting results. I'm just saying I wish we could – there's a better way. I feel like, you know, we have to speed this up a little bit more on getting results. I know there's the routine of getting tested. Of course. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying
they're not. Part of the catch-22. And part of the catch-22 is the more – when you're testing almost every day, you're going to – that's a good thing, but you are going to find every test. You are going to find every positive case, right? So it makes it hard. I mean, everybody's got to be on point, especially when you're not in the bubble. That's the difference between this and the NBA and NHL, who have set it up to where, hopefully, in that environment, if they can keep that environment tight in the bubble, then that decreases the interaction of people that are coming in and out of there and potentially bringing the virus in.
This is one thing we definitely talked about, not having that bubble situation, which is what the NFL is going to deal with, and it's what college football is going to deal with, as well as hockey and NBA are about to start up return to play, and it is going to be in a bubble scenario, hub city, whatever the heck you want to call it. But it is going to be in a much, much more controlled environment. Vince Ferrara, who joins us every Monday at noon, he's actually filling in this week on the midday show on WNML in Knoxville. So he will join us on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. there's a lot of people out there hoping to hear that in the fall, but who knows if we will. Hopefully. That's the plan. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you on this Monday morning. Chase McCable join the show tomorrow. Let's check in with Vince Ferrara, our buddy from WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville. Normally he's at noon, but this week filling in on the midday show, so he joins us now. Vince, how you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Well, we're doing better than the Miami Marlins right now. Not
yeah.
good. 12 players and 2 coaches testing positive.
Yeah, it's tough. Obviously, the Major League Baseball season started on the wrong note with Juan Soto of the Nationals getting it. And then so you had your big season opener, and you don't have your star for, you know, one of the two teams on it. And then this has been clearly the worst outbreak. You had a couple of the Braves that weren't feeling well, and just as a precaution, they held them out, their catchers. But, you know, this is the most significant, and it now has canceled a couple of games, the Orioles-Marlins game and Yankees-Phillies. So, you know, you hope that now with the Phillies that they don't have an outbreak from them, since they just played, and it really complicates things. Obviously, it's not what you want to hear, because overall, I think the sports in their bubbles, the pro sports, had been it seemingly at least moving forward and getting by for the most part and being healthy. And you know, the UFC continues to do their thing. Boxing has continued on. NASCAR, PGA. So it's not like everything has been a disaster, but this is clearly a setback.
Yeah, and it's got to be a little bit scary, right? Because college football is not going to be in a bubble, and we know that Major League Baseball is not in a bubble. The Predators have flown to Edmonton. They're there at their hub city. The NBA and the NHL are about to get cranked up again, and they're in bubble situations, air quotes. So, right, they're in a controlled environment. So you do wonder, and look, we don't know where this baseball thing is going. It's certainly not like, oh my gosh, it's over, you know, right, everything is going to be shut down. It's just, okay, so how are they going to handle this? And yep, then the same will hold true for college football, because I think, as we've been saying for months and months, all this stuff, when it returns, it's inevitable. This stuff was going to happen. Like, no one should be surprised. It's just a matter of, what is your plan to what is your plan to handle these type of situations?
Right. And I know this is contrary to all of the medical experts out there, and there are millions and millions of them that have all the answers and the projections. But a lot of this is what you mentioned. There's so many unknowns, but it's how you handle it. You wonder what Major League Baseball, what their plan was. Is this their plan to shut the teams down? Are there things that they weren't prepared for that they could have done better? And then there's a lot of questions. Where did they do their contact tracing? Where did this come from? Was someone selfish and go to a place, a bar or whatever, someplace they weren't safe, and then bring it back? And they took it for granted. What's the level of testing? Maybe Major League Baseball, maybe for some pro sports, there's certain testing that gives you results quicker, but maybe there's a more inaccuracy to it. I don't know. There's just so many unknowns with the virus and with the way things are being handled. And that's one of the things that I wonder about when we hear about the college sports, to spin it back to that, Darren, to your point. When schools have shut down their workouts for a while because of some positive tests, we never hear where do they think that it was contracted? Where is there something that you can point to where they think, all right, I never went anywhere, but I went this place, and I think that's where I got it. We never hear that kind of info. So you wonder, especially with the schools, Is it kids not taking it seriously enough? Is it a one-off where they went to a lake house and then there's a bunch of people there without masks and there's other people that weren't on the team there and you could track it to that? Or were they, was everybody being safe and then they still ended up with it? Because if it's people that are still being safe and it's still happening, that to me is scary. If it's people not making the right decisions, that's scary, but maybe that's something that can at least be alleviated. Now it's kids. Major League Baseball players are going to go off probably and still do what they want to do. Lou Williams of the NBA is another example. Guys are going to try to do what they want to do. But so you're not going to be 100% in college, but are these learning lessons for college? But the lack of testing, well, the once-a-week testing to me is what's, I think, the scariest part of college football for the season. These pro teams are able to test frequently and avoid mass shutdowns generally, where you're going to do once a week, 72 hours before a game, and you don't know where kids are going after they get tested. That's the scary part for me for the college football season.
So you're saying going to Magic City is probably not a good idea when you're in a bubble situation in a controlled environment as a professional athlete, probably not a good idea? Was that the
place where Lou Williams
– It's his favorite, it's his favorite restaurant in Atlanta. Everybody chill out. Yes. It's his favorite restaurant. Well, I don't have any doubts. He's like, you know, he keeps tweeting out, hey, just ask anybody. It's my favorite. Well, nobody's questioning whether it's your – whether it's your favorite restaurant or not, you actually go to the strip club for wings. But, Lou, are you missing the big picture here? You're in a bubble situation. Why are you going to a strip club when you got excused to go to a funeral? I mean, come on.
Yeah, if the food's so good, order takeout while you're on family leave.
Golly, have you heard of DoorDash or something? Pick up or – golly, I mean – oh, boy.
But as you guys say this, you know, I do think that and this is not something new, right? We've discussed this before. What else have we had to do but discuss these kind of things the last few months? The teams that are disciplined enough to avoid getting it are going to benefit, right? It's really almost part of the conversation, part of the competition. In a lot of ways. And I'm not – I mean, who knows? This is what we need to find out, right? This is what – if I'm the Rob Manfred at the top and then going down to the Marlins is, okay, how did this happen? Because it certainly could happen freakishly when somebody is being careful, right? Especially if you're not in a bubble. But as we just pointed out, there are times where somebody's – where's your head at? You know, you're young. You're not thinking about it. You're not with the program. And you bring it in and spoil it for everybody else, including maybe your team.
And I wonder how much the professionals, they're less likely to listen even to me because they feel like I'm a grown man or woman. I can do what I want. I can take care of myself outside of the bubble, of course, but when you can come and go. But I wonder how much they're being reminded of it. It's hard to not understand that you have to take precautions, not only just for you, but for everybody else, including your teammates, and for the sport to actually continue, regardless of what you feel about it. I mean, you need to do it so we can continue to have the sport that you get paid to participate in and play and excel. The college coaches, you know, you wonder, what did they do over 4th of July break? Were they warning them? Were they begging them, even though they couldn't mandate anything? You know, don't do this, don't do this, don't go here, please. Just like, well, you can go out with your friends. I mean, they can't force them to do anything, but at least reiterate the urgency, the importance of making good decisions. And that's where there's probably some deviance as well, is how much is this being emphasized and where are these learning lessons, or are they still happening even if people are seemingly taking precautions? So there's just so much unknown and you know, a lot of us don't know, even though a lot of people claim to know.
So what's the number now of Vols that have been released from the roster? What is it up to now, four?
Yeah, it was a tough week for tight ends in the NFL. They had three tight ends get released in the last week, including and four total players. The Eagles released Alex Ellis. The Rams released Ethan Wolf, bounced around to a number of different teams. Seahawks released Dominic Wood Anderson, a rookie, and that's never good. And then the Seahawks released Khalil McKenzie, who is on the second team trying to make it in the offensive line in Seattle. So, and the most noteworthy probably is that the Ravens placed defensive back, another rookie, Nigel Warrior, on the reserve COVID-19 list. So that's worst case scenario. If you're a rookie and you're put on that, basically being shut down for a couple weeks. Now, that doesn't automatically mean that player, there were six of the players at the NFL put on that reserve COVID-19 list, doesn't mean that they necessarily have COVID, but they means they were in contact, either have it or came in contact with someone that has tested positive. So, but when you have a hard, you haven't had, you know, Nigel Warrior specifically, guys, he wasn't invited to the combine, so that was less of an opportunity to show what he can do. He didn't have any of the typical off-season workouts or pro days or any of that stuff. Then, as you prepare for the draft, he doesn't get drafted, gets signed by the Ravens, but there's no off-season OTAs or ways for him to improve, learn the system, and develop. And now you weren't going to have any preseason games. Now you're shut down because of this. It really makes it even more difficult for a rookie that's on this list to make it. Granted, they're expanding the practice squads, but it's just tough for anyone. The NFL's cutting their rosters to 80 sooner than they normally do.
Yep.
And so now if you're a rookie and you get released when everyone's cutting their roster down already, it really doesn't look good for you to be able to stick long term.
Phil Steele's magazine is out. What is he saying about the Vols?
Has Tennessee third in the East. I think that's right where they should be. He has Georgia winning the East, and I agree with them there. I still think there's a gap between Georgia, Florida, and those two, and Tennessee. Now, the gap is closing, in my opinion, because of Tennessee's improvement and where they're coming from. But I think when you look at the rosters of those two teams, especially Georgia, because they have been recruiting at such a high level for an extended period of time, I still like Georgia as the more complete team. Florida will be right there, but I still give Georgia the edge in the East, and then Tennessee moving up. Now, if you have fewer games this year, then that's going to have even more emphasis on the head-to-heads. And then obviously, you know, because there are fewer of them, fewer total games, you're going to have a little bit less of a gap. Now, if they have the same number of SEC games, it'll work out and it'll wash out the same. But we don't know how that's going to play out. I think you could very well see different games played for different teams within the league and clearly outside of the league from one conference to another. But Phil Steele high on Tennessee, has them ranked in a lot of position groups in the top 10, including in the offensive line. And I think that's justified. The offensive line, there's still, you know, you still wonder, all right, you're not able to have contact in the offseason. What's the physicality of your offensive line? Are they going to be able to gel together? What's Trey Smith's health? What about the two freshman tackles that are now sophomores? Do they automatically take the next step? Oh, by the way, do you have Cade Mays there? So they're not without questions, even though they're the most talented and deepest it's been in a long time. And if they all work out, then they'll have one of the best, not only in the SEC, but in the country. But there's still a little bit of unknown with that group as well. So, but I think they're ahead of Kentucky, South Carolina, Missouri, and Vanderbilt. And I'd probably have them in that order as well. So I think he was he was spot on with the East.
Talking to Vince Ferrara, talking University of Tennessee here on 102.5 The Game. Vince, I know you've got everything broken down here, so let's go a little overrated, underrated. So let's start with a player. Give me the most overrated and the most underrated player with Tennessee.
Well, I'd say in terms of maybe beyond just the player, I think when you look at what's the typical narrative that you hear is that freshmen can't contribute. And I would say that's something that because Jeremy Pruitt has proven that he will play freshmen, plus he's downplayed the fact that freshmen won't be able to jump in like normal because they've been doing virtual meetings and they haven't been there. I think that narrative is overrated. He played 18 true freshmen last year, all but one played, 153 total games played for the freshmen last year. So he proved even at Alabama that they would play the freshmen. So I think that narrative is a little overrated that they can't jump in there and contribute, because I still think if they're more talented, they're going to find a way on the field. And they have a couple of those kind of guys that I think would. In terms of individuals, in terms of overrated, I would say maybe more so the position, and that's the defensive line, because they're lacking the star power there. If Tennessee had a star, I think I would feel better about that group. Now they're well coached and know the gaps to be in, their assignments, and they have depth. But I think in position wise, that's where I would go. As far as individual players, I don't know, Willie, if there's one that I would go with. I think the number of their key players that they relied on for the turnaround last year have left, but their stars, I think, are stars. The Trey Smiths, the Henry Totos, I think those guys are stars. So I'm not sure that I think there's any one that's overrated from that standpoint.
Vince, there was a time where I would have been ecstatic if Vanderbilt baseball had six guys on opening day Major League Baseball rosters. Tennessee has six right now. You pass these stats alone. I'm still wide-eyed about this because I knew the number in the SEC was a lot, but it just shows you how much the college game has come around in the last 20 years, even in the SEC. Tennessee has six players on Major League Baseball opening day rosters, and they are last in the SEC in that category?
Yeah, and that's an improvement for Tennessee.
Wow.
You had one play. I guess it was on Friday night where Nick Senzel had a liner in the outfield, and then who went to Tennessee, and then Kristen Stewart, who was starting for the Tigers, made a diving catch to rob him. So you had a Vol robbing a Vol. Boy, those have been few and far between in recent years in Major League Baseball. You just haven't had a ton of those. So I think it's improving, and that number is going to come up. But the fact that the whole league continues to pump players into Major League Baseball is so impressive. Now, I will say this, that total from D1 Baseball is with the expanded rosters that they're able to pull from. It's not just the 30, man, because right now there's so much flexibility in their active 30 versus the pool of players. So it includes the total pool of players. But they're tied with Missouri for the fewest in the SEC. Florida has the most with 19, the Pete Alonzos, and then Brady Singer debuting in the Royals rotation. They have, obviously, you would expect them to be up there, but they have more than LSU and Vanderbilt. They're tied for second with 16, and then Mississippi State and South Carolina with 13. South Carolina, it goes back a little ways because you don't think of them right now as an SEC power, but they've been able to deliver and put players in and in the league for a number of years. So it just shows the strength of the Southeastern Conference, and those numbers continue to grow. And I think Tennessee coming up from the bottom will get better, but you got a long way to go to the top. And I think it's kind of reflects what you see in actual SEC baseball, that the regular powers, there's a gap there from them to everybody else. It's a long road to try to get back.
Vince, last thing for me, just in thinking, because I know the question is going to come up really for the next few days as baseball tries to tackle what's happening with the Marlins, right? They could be a situation where, at least in the short term, as they try to fight through this, the Marlins could be going very, very deep in their 60-man. Like, take, for example, J.J. Bleday, who was their first-round pick. He was on the 60-man roster. They might have to get to that point because they don't have anybody else to put in there and play a couple major league games. That is one possibility, I guess, as they try to sort through this. I think the same could be said for college football, right? So I'm sure the wheels are turning with college coaches. If something like that were to happen and you're trying to continue to soldier on and play where a section of your players test positive, hopefully, I mean, God willing, they're all, you know, they're not showing symptoms or nobody's seriously ill or anything. You might have to go very deep on a depth chart, right, to run them out there in a game. That's a possibility.
Definitely, and that's, you know, that also could enhance that what I was talking about in terms of overrating that narrative that freshmen can't contribute. They might have to, more of them, out of necessity. And Willie, to your point, it doesn't even have to be positive tests. If they approve that Power 5 document of proposed protocol, it could shut players down just from, you know, noteworthy contact for 14 days. Now, will that stick? Will there be variance on who applies what? I mean, who's going to be able to track contact for each different player? So I don't know how you manage all that, but yeah, it doesn't even have to be a positive test. And so that's the dicey part about it, is the not enough test and then shutdown versus longer shutdown versus the pros, a lot more frequent testing, sometimes daily, and then not shut down unless there's a bigger outbreak. And real quick, when you asked me underrated, overrated, I didn't mention real quick the underrated. I think underrated, people aren't talking about the replacing of the pass rush for Tennessee. They have some candidates, but they lost their top sack man in Daryl Taylor's with the Seahawks now, and he needed more pass rush with Taylor. Now they don't have him. That is not getting enough play, and the fact that Tennessee has so many new coaches, what are they going to be like on game day? What are they going to be like in game planning? They're great recruiters, but I don't think that's getting enough play, and what those coaches are going to be like in new positions and new to the staff for the in season. And obviously, yes, we have to keep giving this disclaimer. Hopefully we do have that to look at.
No doubt. Vince, enjoy working on the midday show this week. Thanks for doing this as always. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great, safe week. Appreciate you.
You too. Vince Ferrara, WNML. The Sports Animal there in Knoxville, and his Twitter account is at Vince Sports. Free and easy to follow and a good follow. You should check him out. We'll come back and put a bow on the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. By the way, you can stream us from anywhere in the world. It's very easy. Just download the Game Nashville app. That's free and easy to do. Or you can enable your Alexa skill or Google Home if you have that set up in your dwelling or at the workplace, which a lot of you do, including myself. Ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. I let out a gigantic sneeze right before we came back here in my bonus room. It's just me. I've got the door shut. And just one big gigantic sneeze. I had the headset off, of course. And Elijah heard me. I was like, whoo, bless you. He's like, that sounded aggressive. And I said, yeah, it was aggressive. But I'm a one sneeze person. I always, it's one sneeze and one sneeze only. I told Elijah, I was like, my wife's like 3, 4, 5 times. Every time she sneezes, Elijah says he puts his over under at 5.5 sneezes in one, you know, in one setting. So how do you, are you a one sneeze, two sneeze? When it happens, is it once or is it multiple times?
This is an important question we're all dealing with.
This is hard-hitting
right
stuff.
Right? I mean,
well, you don't really want to be around. Yeah, I know. Sneezing is kind of a big deal.
When somebody sneezes, you got to, you know, you hope the person's wearing a mask. You hope the person sneezes with the right technique into the elbow and all that stuff, you know. It depends. I definitely can be a guy that, you know, gets an attack and has several in a row. It does happen. But to answer your question, it varies. Most of the time, just one. Try to get it out of there in one shot.
Because, see, I kind of feel like you're one or the other. That's interesting. Most people
are.
Yeah. I kind of feel like you are either a one-sneeze person or you are a multiple-sneeze person. It's like one or the other.
I wish I could be that efficient. I really do.
Are you? But you're always multiple, though.
Oh, yeah. It's bad enough to the point where after the first one, I'll go ahead and apologize in advance because there's an avalanche coming, and it's about 7 or 8 sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It ain't pretty.
Huh.
Allergy season's awful. I can't go out in public during allergy season because people think there's something really wrong with me.
Especially in these times.
Yeah, no kidding.
People be running from you.
Oh, after the first one, I'd have eyes on me, let alone after like number 7 or 8.
Yeah, you'd be getting some stink eye, depending on where you were.
They might have the ambulance out there at that point after 4 or 5.
If you went 8 times, whew, in a public setting, yikes.
Yeah, it gets pretty embarrassing at times.
Get this guy out of here. So no, nothing. You just, Willie's just like, yeah, sometimes one, sometimes multiple. That's interesting. I don't ever hear anybody say that. I kind of feel like people are pretty adamant, like, yeah, I'm one or the other. But I guess not. Not in your case. So the Predators have made their way to Edmonton. They are in the Hub City, and the Western Conference teams have made their way up north as they get prepared to take on the Dallas Stars on Thursday. We were there last 2 weeks at Bridgestone Arena. It's kind of, I admit it on Thursday. It's a little bit of a sad time for me. Sad, but, you know, you went to the positives, and I get that. I tend to be more of the glasses half empty, and it was sad because I knew that was the last time we were going to do the show there. That was it. They were off on Friday, and when they leave, they leave. And when they come home, it's over. And hopefully it's a long time from now, but it'll be, you know, they're not coming back. So that's why it was sad for me. But nonetheless, what did you think of training camp, summer camp, whatever the heck you want to call it? What did you make of it as they've now made their way to their hub city?
Number one, I'm extremely thankful that they came up with the system that they did. And the careful planning that they did. And I think part of it is the partnership between the players and the owners. I know we've stressed that some, and at some point you're like, listen, I've heard enough about this. Let's just watch. Can we play? You know, but it's so important how the details can make a difference. I do wonder, with what's going on in baseball right now, the relationship between the players and owners, did that prevent them from really getting into the details that would have been necessary to try to avoid something like this happening this quick? Maybe there's nothing they could have done. Maybe. Because this is so invisible, the way you pick up the virus. You can be trying to do everything right and still get it and be surprised to know that you had it, right? Just because you're getting tested very often. But with hockey, the willingness, the enthusiasm of figuring out a way to get into the bubble, I think is going to benefit them a lot. And, you know, fingers crossed, it looks like all the teams got their players there into this environment with minimal issues, right? So that's a great sign that once we get started, we won't be thinking every day, you know, for this next huge game, is somebody going to turn up and not be able to play because they picked it up? It may still happen, right? It still could happen. There's no question. but I think they have done everything they can to minimize the risk. So I know that's probably not the answer you're looking for, because I think this week is going to be about the hockey, right? And that's a good thing. And it was exciting to watch all those scrimmages. I think another question, Darren, is what is going on with the Coyotes? And is what happened with their leadership,
wow,
their general manager? How will that affect their play on the ice, if at all? It could galvanize them, I guess. But at the same time, it's a distraction. It'll be something everybody's asking about as they arrive in Edmonton.
Isn't it amazing? Like, we talked about that last week. We talked with Craig Morgan, Tyson Nash. I don't know if we really got into it much with Tyson Nash, but definitely with Craig Morgan. And it played out. I mean, what a weird situation with their very, very young GM that they just gave a big extension to, what, last year? So, you know, and congratulations to Sully, former Predator Steve Sullivan, has been named the interim GM. But you're right. I don't know if that affects a team or not. I mean, a general manager really doesn't have much to do at this point with, you know, what the roster is doing and what they are doing. But, yeah, I don't know. That's just a weird timing, weird situation with the Coyotes. We knew that trouble was brewing whenever they're talking with Taylor Hall about a long-term future with the Coyotes, and the GM wasn't included in the meetings. Like, rut-row, that's a problem. And sure enough, it played out.
That was a red flag. As we were watching the scrimmage and talking to Craig Morgan from the Coyotes Insider, he was explaining that. We were looking at each other, because we were actually, Darren, in the same building. We were separated by, you know, 10 or 12 feet. But we looked at each other like, the general manager wasn't there?
Right.
For a meeting with
Taylor
Hall?
About a long-term future?
Yeah. Something's up. You know, something's up.
Yeah.
So, once again, you know, how will that affect the team on the ice? Maybe not one iota at all, but the only thing that I know will happen is you're going to have a lot of people getting asked about it, including Rick Tocchet, right? He's going to get peppered with that from the media that's there via the Zoom, right? He won't have a horde of people around him. We know that. But there will be some Zoomers.
Some Zoomers.
Yeah.
Let's go to Chuck in Gainesville. Chuck, what's up?
Hey, boys, how are we doing? This is Chuck in Gainesville.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I can hear how good your hair looks through this here radio. And, and Wiley, you sound great, too. Man, it's good to hear you guys on the radio.
Now, are you in Gainesville, Georgia, Gainesville, Florida?
Sounds like Gainesville, Florida, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Gainesville, Florida. See, I heard you talk to that Vince Ferrara fella just a few minutes ago about the Vols. You know, it's Gator Country down here.
Yeah. You need to work on that accent. It seems like it needs to be refined a little.
It's not good. I wanted to do something fun because I just missed you guys, and you were confused of when I was coming back, so I figured I'd just call in as Chuck. But
well, I didn't know what do we call your, you know, you go away for a week, and then it's like, you know what? How about another day? Let's do it another day. I didn't know what to call it. I'm like, extended vacation? He'll be back tomorrow? I don't know.
It's a travel day.
Well, sometimes you hear extended vacation and you think, well, maybe this person is like really extended, like never coming back.
Yeah. When you open the show, I'm like, dang, he's telling people like extended vacation. They might be thinking that something's going on. No, it's a travel day. It's like baseball, you know?
Oh, it's a travel day. Okay.
It's a travel day.
And so typically that is a Monday for baseball. Okay. So actually, there's going to be some baseball teams that have a day off today. I'm sure you've heard.
I have heard. I've been listening. It was good to hear Robbie and Joe this morning. So I was listening on the app.
That was excellent news.
And then you guys in the first hour. Yeah, Miami, not good. And then I think I heard that the Phillies and Yankees, that's been postponed tonight too. So, not good right now, but this is like you guys were talking about. I think this is something that we were all kind of prepared for, that there could be, you know, some sort of outbreak or whatever you want to call it. But hopefully they can get it locked down and be able to, continue. But it's definitely going to be easier for the NHL and the NBA with their bubble life to control some of these things.
We're getting a lot of action on Twitter about one sneezer or multiple sneezers. It looks like all signs are pointing toward multiple sneezer. So you want to weigh in on the way out?
Yeah, I'm usually multiple. Like, it's two, sometimes three. Every now and then I'll be a single sneeze, but it's usually back-to-back or sometimes the triple play.
I feel like I'm in the heavy minority right now as a one-time sneezer.
Yeah, but you are. You're very consistent with that.
It's one, but it's a big one. You know, it's I'm going to get everything out of it. It's going to be a kaboom.
I like how Elijah called it aggressive.
Yeah, that is one word. Sometimes my son says it scares him when I sneeze. He wants a heads up. Well, be safe.
That's never good.
Be safe, Chuck, in Gainesville. Make your way back, and I guess we will see you tomorrow unless you decide to keep extending. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I look forward to it. I'm refreshed, and I am ready to talk about some live sports hockey this week, so it'll be fun.
All right, Chase. Good to hear from you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you, boys.
Chase McCabe, everybody, on his way back from Florida. Not a good place to be right now. Yikes. So he will join us tomorrow. Okay, that will do it for hour number one. We'll come back. There was a big trade in the NFL. How does that affect, or does it, affect the Titans? We'll tell you all about that as we talk with TD. Teron Davenport in the On Deck Circle. That is next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.